T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thank you, Joe. This hour of the Spiegel and Parkin Show is brought to you by Schaumburg Ford. When searching for a new Ford, search for RoermanFord.com. It is Spiegel and Parkins. Danny is on vacation today, and yesterday he'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow on Wednesday, we'll talk to Mike Florio. We'll do Can't Do It. We'll be back in the studio. As of right now, Barry Rosner is in for Danny, and we are here at the Chicago Auto Show, like the score is just about every year. Yesterday, Bernstein and Goff last in the afternoon, and now today it's us.
Visit Toyota at the Chicago Auto Show to check out the all-new Camry, sporty Corolla, adventurous RAV4, and the family-friendly Highlander. Toyota, let's go places.
Next couple of days, the B&G Show looks like it'll be here, including a special Valentine's Day edition tomorrow. I'm sure the love will be flowing as they take some of these little score stress balls and pelt people with them. You threatened that you had an insider with the auto show who could talk to us about the carpet and fill me in and tell me everything I need to know.
Yes, I texted him, and we are efforting that,
man,
as we speak.
Yeah, you have no idea how much that excites me. No idea.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I believe you're serious.
It's not rational necessarily, but, you know, I have interest. I want to know.
I mean, it's nice carpet, but what is... What are you most interested in? Like, what happens to it afterward, or how do they keep it so clean?
You're talking down to me now. You're condescending.
I'm trying to get an understanding.
You don't deserve my passion, Barry. You don't. Just forget it. All right.
Whatever.
I'll wait.
Honestly, whatever. I mean, really.
All right. Good night, everybody. So long, everybody. The Valentine's
you're
Day
the one,
good vibes
You're
continue.
The one who spit up in his laptop. And it was something you were reading, I think, as I said.
It's entirely possible. This Bears offseason, I am so excited. I want things to kind of begin. Now we've transitioned to the point, whereas instead of like multiple Rams articles about how they did what they did last year, now I can't stop looking at the free agent lists. And how many different ways can I see the free agent wide receiver list broken down? How many times can I read people tell me that Albert Wilson from the Chiefs might be a better fit than Jarvis Landry for what you're actually trying to do with this offense? I just keep reading stuff. I keep looking. I'm very, very involved in it. I find myself excited because Matt Nagy, or Nagy, is Doug Peterson. It's the same animal as 2 years ago. It really is, that Philly guy. It's an Andy Reid guy who's going to have the hybrid offense and do his whole thing. And here we are. You realize what's happening now in Philly? 2 years in, they've got to replace everybody on the offensive staff. This is the good problem, but this is the kind of problem you dream of having when you hire a head coach and create the quarterback incubator like they created in Philly.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, I think it's not as simple as sometimes it's made out to be. You first have to find the right guy. Then he's got to find all the right guys. And then you've got to have the quarterback. There's many questions here to be answered. So while I understand your excitement, there is much work to be done.
Certainly, certainly. But, in Philly, which is one of the models you're following, if not the number one model you're following, in terms of, like, bringing in as many former quarterbacks as you can and all those different voices, and you got Brad Childress now, and Mark Helfrich is Frank Reich. So Frank Reich goes to Indy as the head coach. John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach, is now the offensive coordinator in Minnesota.
I hope that's the super volcano, honest to God. I really do.
Why? Because I started talking Bears?
Partially. It's only a small percentage of it.
But they've got to, 2 years in, they've got to find new guys. They got to find new guys to do that job. But this is why I've always wanted, like, the offensive genius who you're going to link up with your quarterback, is you can withstand that, theoretically. Like, the Andy Reid Eagles kept losing guys, right? Andy Reid Chiefs will keep losing guys, keep losing coaches, and as long as Andy Reid is there, then he'll just grab some other guys that he's got lying around, or he'll grab other guys that he's got relationships with. And this is kind of what you dream of the Bears being able to do.
Yeah, it's a process that takes a considerable amount of time, and you seem to be boiling it down to now one off season.
Yeah, that's all I'm giving him. That's all I'm giving him. you saw what the Rams did. I want a very similar thing. I want two free agent wide receivers, one drafted wide receiver. I'm going to need an offensive lineman or two. And you got the brand new coaches, and I'm expecting an 11-win season and a playoff appearance.
Yeah, it's the fourth year. I mean, honestly, you should be expecting that.
That's what Ryan Pace's fourth year should be.
Because by the fourth year, I mean, I remember us having a conversation when this thing first began, and you did not have 4 years in mind. You were thinking more like the second year of the John Fox turnaround thing. Which was understandable, because this is the NFL. It doesn't take 4 years.
It's not supposed to.
It doesn't take 4 years. But here we are in the fourth year. Yeah, they should be making the playoffs and winning playoff games. Absolutely. So your expectations should be very, very high.
Expectations are high, especially for this offseason. You're going to get to see the Bears sooner, because they've added now a preseason game. The Bears.
The Bears and the Ravens.
What?
Are going to play at the Hall of Fame game.
Our top story tonight. So they get to go to camp a week early, which is a big deal.
That's a big deal. You get the benefit of that extra week of camp. And you get to see them play, in quotation marks, a week early.
But in all seriousness, for the coaches, for the players, and players don't want to be there, but for the coaches, this is a big deal. It's an extra week. That's an advantage.
So August 2nd, it'll be Bears and Ravens on as Urlacher and Ray Lewis will both go in to the Hall of Fame. And you get five preseason games. And then eventually,
Woo!
How many? How many do you want? How much bad things could you want? Give me an extra one. No, but it's a big deal. You get that extra week of practice. All right, so did you see the story, Rosner, what Jim McMahon basically
accused?
Well,
accused.
It was brought up to him, and he didn't dismiss it. Now, had you heard this from back in the day that Mike Ditka had theoretically bet on William the Refrigerator Perry, had bet an early prop bet on the fridge a touchdown?
I've never heard anyone voice it publicly like this. Yes, I have. I mean, yeah, we've talked about stuff like this because we lived through it, and I will never forgive Mike Ditka. As much as he accomplished, and he deserves a lot of credit, not as much as Jim Finks, but he deserves a lot of credit for what happened in 1985.
It was 50-1.
But I will never forgive him
for not
giving Walter Payton the football. Mm-hmm. I'll never forgive him for
and
that.
And he has often said he regrets it. Betting was it started at 50-1. This from the big league today. It started at 50-1.
William Perry touchdown prop.
William Perry touchdown prop. And it ended up going.
That's the first prop.
It says they were in their infancy. Prop bets were in their infancy.
But that was the prop that created the
hubbub?
The interest in prop betting on the Super Bowl.
It went as high as 75-1, and then people bet it like crazy. It went all the way down to 5-1, and supposedly Ditka was upset with Vegas because the Bears were such giant underdogs against the 49ers.
What, in the NFC Championship the year before?
The year before.
Well, they had no quarterback.
Well, but he thinks it demoralized his team. So he wanted to get revenge on Vegas somehow.
Back up a second.
Yeah, that's about
so he was mad about the point spread in the 49ers game and that demoralized his team. I've never heard that. I don't really know. I don't know where that comes from. I mean, they were facing an extraordinary 49ers team. And as great as the Bears' defense was already, they didn't have an offense without a quarterback.
And if they were demoralized, that was your job to undemoralize.
I don't believe that part of it.
Okay,
I don't believe the being mad at Vegas thing was part of it. If you're going to sell me on the notion that he or friends or people he
wanted
knew
to get rich
may have capitalized on that, then. I suppose that's a possibility. That's a pretty serious accusation.
Yeah, Jim McMahon was asked about it on the radio, and he said, I think he made a bet, is the quote. I'm not positive, but I know he likes to gamble. Everybody likes to gamble every once in a while. I'm sure he probably put some money down. That's McMahon just talking about Ditka off the cuff.
It's a pretty serious accusation. Although I guess it doesn't matter when you're winning 46-10. I guess it doesn't. It's not like he's betting against his team. But
no, but it's
you're betting on a game in which you participate. That's not good.
I find it easy to believe that this could be possible, though, knowing the character of Ditka then since then, and some of the stuff that we've known about Ditka. But remember that then, this is a guy who was stealing endorsements from his own players. That's the stuff that I can ever get out of my mind when I think about his relationship with them and how things kind of soured quickly. Or now at a moment like this, you're asking me to put the man's character under question.
Yeah, there were two big parts of that. One was the endorsement thing, telling them they shouldn't do as many.
Yeah.
And then doing every possible one that he could.
And there was the one specific one, Barry, where like he said, I think it was Campbell's Soup, right? Where he told guys, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And then a few weeks later, they look on their TV and they see him doing the endorsement he told them not to do.
The other part of it was the whole Doug Flutie episode and the backing the replacement players during the 87 strike. That's where he lost the team. They might have been, understandably angry about the endorsement stuff in the years after the 85 Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But he lost them during the 87 strike, and that was pretty much it.
So, yeah.
Is what you read possible? It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think it's entirely possible.
I know it still aggravates me. I mean, I'm still mad about it. It still bothers me.
That's one that still sits there, huh?
Yeah.
Still sits there, yeah.
And you know what else is the people who don't understand why Peyton could have felt left out, how he felt left out, how a professional athlete winning the most important game of his life could still feel left out and have it feel somewhat anticlimactic by not feeling like you're a part of it. I totally get that. I totally understand that. He carried that franchise on his back
mm-hmm.
for 10 years, and then at the most important moment, he was a decoy. And it worked, by the way. I mean, if you watch some of the plays where you see 9 of the 11 guys on the field go for the play action to the direction Peyton was going.
Sure, of course.
I mean, I get it.
Great.
I get it. But you have 5 or 6 or 7 chances in that game inside the 3 or 4 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Give the man a taste. Let him feel like he's part of this thing. I'm still bothered by
yeah.
that.
And if he actually has the regret and you mix that in with what we've known about him and his willingness to do whatever it takes for dollars along the way, then this is not very difficult for me to wrap my brain around at all.
You make a compelling case.
It's 670 The Score. It's Spiegs and Rosner. We are live at the Chicago Auto Show here at the Toyota Sports Corner.
Visit Toyota at the Chicago Auto Show to learn more about the Toyota hybrid technology, concept cars, and all the legendary Toyota cars, trucks, and SUVs. Toyota, let's go places.
We started the show by talking a bunch of Blackhawks and what the hell you're supposed to do with this mess. We could get back to that a little bit later and open to talk to somebody who can very much relate to what's going on in Bradenton, Florida. It's Spiegel and Parkins with Rosner sitting in on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, I love the Beaters. 670 The Score. It's Fat Tuesday tonight. Go out there, get hammered, get drunk, and then tomorrow morning, Ash Wednesday begins for the Catholics among our listeners as they move on and remove the fat that you're supposed to enjoy tonight. See? A Jew can be taught. I can be taught. I can learn stuff, Rosner, even at this late age.
I disagree with
moment.
The premise.
Yeah, what, the whole idea of removing fat?
Yes.
I understand. What makes this Tuesday fatter than all other Tuesdays? Nothing, son. Now go back to enjoying your lard. Had a big decision to make this morning, Campy, as Ruben loves the blue Doritos, loves the Cool Ranch. That's number 1 on the snack depth chart.
Solid.
Right now for the 6-year-old. And he asked for some with breakfast, and I had to think about it for a minute. I'm like, wait a minute, what kind of president do I actually want to begin here at this point in his life?
I love that you needed time to consider
it. I had to consider it
for a split second. Well, for a split second, you weren't sure what the answer was.
Well, don't do like me, son. Do what I say.
Depending what he ate, you could have made it a crumble on top.
Right. I could have done a crumble on top of some eggs or something like that. But no, he gets a bagel and he gets a banana. And if there's a third item, it's not going to be blue Doritos. I have spoken. Got to put your foot down somewhere. Well, you know me, Cappy. I'm trying to stop the multi-generational cycle of food abuse that is within the family. I'll begin other things.
Yeah, you're a quitter. I understand.
I will instill other horrible things within the boy, but not that one.
I had six punchkies for breakfast. Is that bad?
Oh my! Is it punchki day over there?
It is. The ones that my aunt Jo makes them in her kitchen every year.
Oh, really?
It's just a nonstop revolving door of family members coming in for punchkies.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? I'll have 3 dozen. And then we leave.
What are the flavors?
They're just strawberry. She makes just a strawberry, and they're small. Mm-hmm. You know, they're little, so you can have 6, and it's not a big deal. That's only like having 3 donuts. It's healthy.
Can you, are there any extras? Can you bring some in, or can I try one? I don't think you've ever brought them in.
I bring them in all the time. I'll put one in your drawer.
He brings them every year. I've been here to see it.
I don't think I have.
I've not had one.
How do I miss these?
Well, the Iron Man streak has often broken up, and maybe just coincidentally you've not been there every time I've brought them in for the last 3 years.
That's entirely possible.
I will put one aside for you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
I don't mean to criticize. I mean, I had 4 donuts for breakfast today.
So. Well, yeah, you have that preposterous metabolism where you can eat whatever you want. And when's the last time your weight changed by more than 2 pounds?
When I quit playing hockey and stopped lifting 6 days a week, I dropped about 16, 17 pounds. Uh-huh. Something like that.
And when was that?
7 or 8 years ago.
Okay, and
like
have
that.
You weighed yourself? Do you weigh yourself from time to time?
Never.
Never. Yeah. All right. Well, I think you're miserable in other ways. You may not have that issue. No. But you find your way to your own misery.
Yeah.
As needed.
I don't need any help from you.
I'm glad.
I shouldn't be making fun of you guys. For how you eat.
Oh no, it's okay. Everything's open game, Barry. You know that.
Barry, have you ever had a pizza puff for breakfast?
In college, yeah.
What was considered breakfast time wise for you at that point?
Whenever I got up.
Seems about right. So it really could have been actual lunchtime.
Don't know. Really no concept of time back then. I remember one really, really cold week in February where I got up every day in time for General Hospital. And I think that was 1 or 2 o'clock.
Yeah,
I don't know.
2 o'clock, and I think. 3 o'clock Eastern.
I didn't leave the Pike House that week. It was just too cold. It was just too cold. I mean, I couldn't do it.
So why, yeah. So don't do it if you don't have to.
Yesterday, and I did not, I've not heard this yet. But
okay.
But I'm told... Our good friend Mad Dog Russo did not approve of the Cubs signing of Yu Darvish. So I am going to hear this for the first time right now.
Hey, one big signing over the weekend. You know what? I'm not going to go crazy about it one way or the other. These guys wanted me to kill the Cubs. I'm not going to do that. 6 years, 126. Listen, he's going to be a good third starter on that team. The Cubs are spending $21 million annually for the next 6 years to get those wins in the postseason. They're doing this to see if they can win games in October, and that's where it becomes a little dicey. Because Darvish was always spotty in big games. Darvish has been fragile, and he was very fragile last year. Now, the Dodgers and the Cubs and everybody's going to tell you, well, Chris, how about the 2 playoff games he pitched in? He had a 2-0 lead against Arizona. He went 5 innings. And he had a 2-0 lead against the Cubbies. He went 5 1/3 or 6 innings. And they were not stressful games. So from that standpoint, you put him in a stressful spot. That's when he implodes. Game 2 last year, 2 years ago, Texas against Toronto down a game. Game 3 against the Astros at a game apiece. Game 7 against the Astros. A playing game against the Orioles didn't get the job done.
All right, so that's Chris Russo on Darvish.
Now, he hates the Cubs. You know that, right?
Yeah.
All of 2016, every day is the Cubs are not going to win. They're not good enough.
I like that he starts out by saying, look,
those
I'm
guys,
not going to go hard either
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
These guys want me to rip it. And
who's
then he proceeds to rip it.
Who's these guys want me to kill the Cubs?
Producers, I guess. Oh. Handlers.
Oh. Is it just a bit? Like, come out and scream and bury somebody?
100%.
Oh, okay.
I haven't taken... Look, I got to tell you. I have not watched a moment of that particular show, really, in a couple of years. Like, I might hear a snippet or when certain guys are on, you know? If Chris Ranji's on or he butchers the name of Sahadev Sharma or something, like, I'll hear a snippet. But that is the last guy whose opinion on baseball I would ever even consider. People must watch it, I suppose.
He's clearly making it up as he goes along.
Absolutely.
It's a stream of consciousness.
It is the bloody car wreck that you sometimes cannot turn away from. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of it, and I can't stand him. And I'm sometimes can't, I just can't turn away sometimes. There's so much wrong with, like, everything that he just said. But I wonder, I mean, look, he was going to get money from somebody. He was going to get contract from somebody.
Who, Chris Russo?
Yeah, no, Darvish.
That's the problem.
Would he be as aggravated by the signing at $21 million a year, which is a joke, if it were somebody else? That's my question, because I know he hates the Cubs.
I think he has absolutely no legitimate thoughts on the subject.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
Has handed a few facts
okay.
and is given the advice of what angle to take.
And then
he tries to take it while also trying to distance himself from it at the beginning because he knows he doesn't know a damn thing.
Distancing himself from his
from his own opinion that he's about to give.
Yeah, but
plays a role. He's playing a role of bloviator as prescribed by producers about something he knows virtually nothing.
But
and that's every day.
Barry likes intentional talk, so
stop it. You're
going to
get
even.
Will you stop with that? I made the mistake of saying to Joe last year that I don't hate intentional talk. And I like that Millar and Rose like each other so much that they have a good time on that show and that I find that pleasant. And that, to me, it was okay.
It wasn't terrible.
But I've since changed my mind on that.
Yeah.
I can no longer do it because Millar is just he. What I thought was just Millar being a dope turns out these are all planned bits. Whenever he does become a dope,
well, that's the danger. That's the danger in actually watching the stuff, is that you might be entertained for a moment. But yes, it's all. A lot of it is just prescribed, dictated bits.
He did a bit on the golf course and intentionally fell into the water, and I knew it would become a thing. And I was like, "All right, I really am stupid for watching this garbage, so I don't anymore." But Joe, much like you, Matt Spiegel,
yeah,
is not going to let this go. He's going to remind me every time we speak that I once said I like intentional talk. And I confess that I'm stupid.
You have to own that.
I don't think this is breaking news that I'm stupid. And now Joe's just gonna make me eat this every
it's
time.
So bad. There's nothing about Kevin Millar. Nothing that you would like.
You're right.
I mean, it's
You're
horrible.
Right. You're right. I confess. I was wrong.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment on The Score is brought to you by Fogo de Chão, the authentic Brazilian steakhouse where premium fire-roasted meats like filet and lamb chops are carved right at your table. Indulge today at Fogo in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. Yeah, it's really interesting, that minute of tape that you forced me to listen to.
Sorry.
Chris Russo. No, I liked it because it reminds me of what the cycle is like for a guy like that once you agree to do a show like that where how are you supposed to come in with a legit fiery opinion on every damn subject that is presented to you?
You have to scream about something to start that show every day?
Well, for him especially, he's established that as the reputation. This is what I do. I'm the screamer and the entertainer.
The entire month of January, there was nothing there. Nothing. There was no baseball to scream about. Unless you were going to scream every day about why no free agents have signed.
Yeah.
But he had that take wrong as well.
Well, I mean, but it's interesting. But that minute really gives you insight, because he tells you at the top he's not going to do it. They want me to do it, but I'm not going to do it. And then by the end, he ends up doing it. But in such a weak, kind of ham-fisted way, it makes it so obvious as to what he's actually doing.
I got to give you credit. I got to give you credit. You listen a lot harder than I do and are able to find the twisted way in which he goes about doing his job, whereas I just hear nonsense. I just hear a whole bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's just
What about Dave Roberts, who throughout the postseason was taking pitchers out after three or four or five innings in every single game? I mean, did you miss that part? Do you not remember that part?
No, he's not really even considering it. He's not really even considering it. He's given a short little list of facts, and they're the ones that back up the argument that he's carved out. And that's a certain style of sports infotainment, obviously, that is taken over the business. And if you're not careful, you know, if you're young and you're coming up in this business, you can fall prey to trying to do it that way.
I wonder if he's aware, while he's doing what you say he's doing, that everyone else on that channel makes fun of him. Everyone else on the channel thinks he's a goof and makes fun of him, and they look for, they must get tipped off, as frequently happens at our place, they must get tipped off by the producers, because other shows find the oddest stuff to make fun of him about, including stuff that you don't see on his show, where he's angry about a lemonade that somebody brought him, or that there's no Kleenex on the set, or that the napkins are visible on the air. And they use this on the other shows to make fun of him, but not like in a cute sort of way, like this guy's really disturbed sort of way.
What's wrong with napkins being visible on the set, by the way?
I can't have these napkins here.
We're streaming live on Facebook Live. Brian Gerch is the governor of the chat room. And yesterday when we were in studio and you could watch us as you usually can, somebody texted and said, "Hey, what's in that red Solo cup behind you?" And I turned around, and sure enough, there's a red Solo cup that was visible and in the frame. And I got up and I went and I picked it up to find out. There was nothing in there. There was absolutely nothing in there. But it's just, it's an interesting world when, like, because of the way we do it now, you can interact with us as much as you like and ask questions about things. And see, like right now, I'm sure people, if you're watching the video stream, right, Big Brother's always watching is what I'm saying. Right there, Barry. Go ahead. People could see which golf hat you decided to wear today.
I've been wearing the Paris Ryder Cup hat for about a year. I got it early. I bought it early. This year, this fall, the Ryder Cup will be in Paris at a golf course that was built for the Ryder Cup. They can host as many as 100,000 people a day in a stadium sort of setting, much like TPC in Jacksonville. At the Players, it's going to be an event. It's going to be an extraordinary event. If you love match play, if you like team events in the Ryder Cup, it's going to be phenomenal.
And when is that?
It's usually in September or October. I'm not sure of the schedule this year, but that's in Paris this fall.
Okay.
You going to go to Paris?
No, I'm not, but I'm wondering about the kind of what event. I know for you personally, one of the highlights of your sports viewing attendance career was Ryder a few years
ago. The Ryder Cup at Medina.
At Medina, yeah. Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's
where does that rank for you lifelong?
That's number one.
Number one.
Yeah.
Because of the atmosphere, because of the way that it ended up playing out, because of the proximity that you can have to the action at an event like that.
Being inside the ropes and 50,000 people a day at Medina and the crowds, the Chicago sports crowds, the event itself, the magnitude, the way it's grown as big as it is now, and given the circumstances and the way Europe rallied, just an extraordinary event. That's as a professional, having witnessed it as a professional.
Right.
I suppose.
But even though you're a professional, I think part of the appeal of that is that it still titillates you on some kind of fan level. It still reaches a passion in you, which I know has been weeded out by the nature of the business in many other different realms.
Yeah, people are going to say Cubs World Series didn't eclipse that. Well, I'm there. I mean... While I am at the Ryder Cup working, these are not players and teams that I generally cover. So it's and this might be a bit esoteric, but it's different than when I'm covering a team that I cover 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
I have no passion one way or another in terms of my personal feelings. I write with passion, but I don't have a rooting interest. Whereas in this case, these are not teams or individuals that I cover on a daily basis. So it was a different feeling being there, and it was, I mean, I don't know if we'll see another Ryder Cup here in the next 15, 20, 30 years.
No, the option of to actually like replicate that even, on any level is extremely unlikely, right? The fact that it'll actually even be here, the fact that you would get an atmosphere like that.
And the comeback, which was comparable only to Brookline in 99, but that was the Americans coming back on American soil. For the Europeans to do it here, unbelievable.
It's 670 The Score. It's Spiegs and Rosner here with you live from the Auto Show as we broadcast to you from the Toyota Sports Corner. Lots more to come, including a check-in about what it was like the last time MLB did something like they're doing in Bradenton, Florida. Keep it right here on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is The Score, Spiegel and Parkins Show. Rosner sitting in for Danny Parkins. We have the official terms on the Cubs' Yu Darvish contract, because the contract is official, will be announced today by the team. And I guess he passed the physical, which was yesterday. And now, so Bob Nightingale in a couple of different tweets here has sent out some terms. Check this out, Barry. He's got an opt-out after 2019, which we knew. There are Cy Young escalators that pay him $2 million for winning the Cy Young and $1 million for finishing anywhere between second and fifth. So he's got those escalators along
money,
the way.
Money they would be happy to pay.
Of course. And now here's what we know about the average money. The average salary is 21, but now we know how they're breaking it up. Out of the 126 mil, it's front-loaded a bit, $25 million this year in 2018. $20 million goes down to $20 mil next season, 2019. So right there, that's a big-time benefit in terms of activity they're anticipating for next year's free agent class and the room that they had. So I guess that changes because it had been seemingly $11 million under the tax for this year. Now that you know it's 25, I think that means there's $7 million under the tax, according to Cott's contract, if we're to take it at the gospel of 25 right now as opposed to 21.
Yeah, not much difference in terms of next year from the average annual value of 21 to be down to 20, but better to spend that 20 next year versus the 25 this year.
Right, and then it jumps up. It jumps up to 22 mil in 2020, 22 again in 2021, and then down to 19 in 2022 and down to 18 in 2023. So,
okay. So from an AAV of 21, nothing really huge there.
No, except for this year and next year, which they've got the room now. So front loaded a little bit more now and leaves themselves a little bit more room for next year. Also a full on no trade clause in the first 4 years of the deal.
Okay,
for
Yu
Darvish.
Okay, that's important information to have, but that's part of that 4 year window. That's the Bryant window. So that's not really shocking. And then if he's bad, you're not going to be able to trade him anyway. So, right?
Right.
As he gets old and bad, not going to be able to trade him anyway.
Right.
I thought this would be right up your alley tonight on the MLB Network. It's not Mad Dog Russo or Intentional Talk. At 8 o'clock, the MLB Network will have a special on the Atlanta Braves and their run of 14 straight division titles. I know how you enjoy the history of the game. It's called Atlanta Rules. Here are some numbers for you, Matt.
Is that a new one, by the way? Because I don't recall having seen it.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah, you know, recently, the one they did on Cleveland, the best team that never was, I think they called it, or the best champ that never was, or whatever the hell it was called, that was really good.
The one on Jeter was really good, too, from his chase of 3,000 and everything that surrounded that.
Mr. Padre, the one on Tony Gwynn, is sitting there on my DVR. I haven't gotten to that one yet. But we've got the one debuting tonight on the Atlanta Braves. All right.
There was one on Billy Martin.
Yeah, that's also on my DVR.
That's pretty good, too. Here's some numbers for you from that run of Atlanta Braves teams. From 93 to 2003, which is known as the Maddox era in Atlanta, the Braves made the playoffs every year, averaged 99.44 wins in non-strike seasons.
Wow.
And in the two shortened years, were on pace for 97 and 101 victories. For seven of those years, Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz were the big three, taking home five of those seven Cy Young Awards. The first few seasons, Steve Avery was the fourth guy.
Uh-huh.
And in 1993, the Braves went 104-58. 104-58. Mm-hmm. That's when they beat the Giants on the last day of the season. The Giants won the 103 games.
That's that incredible Giants team of Robbie Thompson and Will Clark. And
Barry Bonds.
And okay. All right. So, yeah, I'm not the earlier one. Matt Williams, too?
Yes.
Okay.
So in that 93 season, 104-58, the four starters averaged.
21 wins.
19-8.
Okay.
With a 3.02 ERA in 36 starts and 243 innings.
Wow.
They averaged 243 innings.
Not a lot of bullpen guys that mattered in those years for Atlanta. And they'd go from Alejandro Pena to, you know, Wohlers for a while there until he got the thing. But, you know, obviously usage usage so completely different. I don't even know if I could go three or four deep on what that bullpen usually was.
Their average age was 26 at the time, those four guys. 243 innings averaged.
Stop for a second because, I mean, that's amazing. And that's not that long ago.
Yeah,
it really isn't. I mean, it's long ago in the sort of the evolution of the game and the way that folks have changed in the way that they're trying to preserve arms and as well as manage
games. And in the process, don't teach anybody how to throw a complete game to throw 250 innings.
Right. It's just not going to happen. Get Leo Mazzoni talking about what their methodology was then and what he thinks the methodology was now. But 99 wins. They averaged 99 wins, Barry.
For 10 years.
For a decade.
Denny Nagel replaced Avery near the end of that decade. And in 98, the top four were joined by Kevin Millwood. That five-man rotation that year averaged 18-7 with a 2.97 in 31 starts and 207 innings.
Averaged under a 3 ERA.
As the Braves went 106-56. Five guys averaged 207 innings. How many guys threw 200 innings in the big leagues last year? 12, 15, maybe?
It's incredible. It's a very, very
that
small number.
Five-man staff averaged 207 innings. So we can talk about the progression of bullpen baseball and all that. Is it as much a necessity of what you've created as it is an innovation? Because you don't train your starters in the minors anymore to pitch nine innings or to pitch 250, let alone, I mean...
It's all worked in concert together, hasn't it? Because now you're managing with fear as well as managing aggressively with the bullpen. It's like it feels better to say, no, I'm managing aggressively with my bullpen. Of course, if you don't have a bullpen that's good enough to do it, you shouldn't be managing that way. But most people will just follow along whether they actually have the horses to do it or not.
You just said it. It's not that long ago.
No, it really isn't. It's Spiegel and Parkins right here on the score. Let's talk to someone who was at an unsigned free agent camp the last time it happened in MLB. And we'll get back to the winter tenants next hour as well. It's 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.